This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is 104.1 FM KMOX. Amy Markscores and Chris Ranji today. Final hour of the show. We are now 9 until noon every day, and then at 12 o'clock it is the Gas House Gang. We'll do some Cardinals baseball, some sports with you from 12 until 1 ahead of the Dave Glover Show. That's going to happen every day here on KMOX. But we go to the guest line, and we already told you that we have been talking to some important figures that have come through this radio station over the course of its history. Some terrific broadcasters have been here, and also Amy and me. We spoke to Joe Buck, we had Dan Dierdorf on, and now it is time to talk to Bob Costas, KMOX and broadcast legend, with us here this morning. How you doing? Everything good, Bob?
Hello, Chris. How are you? Hi, Amy.
Hello. Good morning.
Yeah. So it's a big day for us here. We've gone to FM, which I know there was a KMOX FM at one point, and you got to hear sports on it. But this is a different day for us here. So we thought we'd talk to you.
Well, that's just fine, except other than the kilocycles, I don't know what the difference is. I'm a technophobe. I mean, I had a flip phone until 5 years ago, and I can't figure out how to stream anything.
What?
So I realize that content moves all over the place, but the only thing I understand is the content itself. So I would assume that whether it's AM, it's FM, or it's on some device that someone will soon invent that gives you all your communication in the palm of your hand, your hand, your actual hand. It'll be embedded in your hand like a chip, right? The only thing I understand is how good is the quality? So to me, if I was broadcasting a ball game on KMOX, this wouldn't make any difference to me whatsoever. I'm not trying to take the air out of the balloon.
You're poo-pooing the FM, Bob.
Congratulations to all of it. Congratulations to all of it. KMOX is wonderful. And John Rooney's still going to say there's a ground ball to shoot, or that ball's a goner. So to me, broadcasting is broadcasting. The only thing that FM meant to me back in the day was that's usually where you could hear rock and roll.
Well,
that's where you went to hear rock and roll.
We're going to start doing some of that, too, if things don't improve on this show.
Yeah, if you're talking about the quality.
Keep in mind, if you need a long bathroom break, just put on In a Gabba De Vida.
Oh, that's a good one.
But that's a 1970s reference, which I specialize in.
Well,
most of our listeners. So
yes, good. Well, there you go.
A master class.
I'm smacking a demographic bullseye.
Well, it was a masterclass of poo-pooing the FM, but it does sound real like Bob. I bet people driving up and down Highway 6440 right now, they've never heard you sound so crystal clear in their cars. That's what's exciting.
I do understand that FM transmission apparently has a higher quality than AM does. Yes.
Well, speaking of high quality, we actually just recently spoke with Dan Dierdorf, and he was talking about joining KMOX and hosting Sports Open Line while he was still a player in the 70s. Mm-hmm. He was 76. I think you started with KMOX in 74?
Yes, that's right.
Wow, mm-hmm. That was an all-star lineup in those 70s. No wonder why you like him so much.
Well, you know, KMOX almost could have staffed an entire national network sports division on its own. When you think about the history, if you want to go way back, Milo Hamilton was not as well known in St. Louis, but he was briefly part of the Cardinal team, and he's in the broadcaster's wing of the Baseball Hall of Fame. And then, of course, Harry Carey, one of the all-time greats, and Joe Garagiola, and the great Jack Buck. And Dan Kelly was the premier hockey announcer of his time. And Bob Starr on the radio was as good a football announcer on the radio as you could ever imagine. And then along comes Dan Dierdorf. Gary Bender, who was a big star at CBS TV for quite a while, was at KMOX for a while as well. Then Joe Buck, and I'm leaving people out. John Rooney is an excellent baseball announcer now. It's a very, very long list. And when you walk through those doors at One Memorial Drive back in the day, when you walk through those doors, you knew that you were in a place where broadcasting was elevated. And it wasn't confined to sports, although sports was a huge part of it, 50,000-watt signal at a time when fewer games were on television. So not only would Cardinal fans, for example, be listening to more games on the radio than watching on TV because not so many were available, but the signal boomed out across much of the country. So you'd have people all over the country listening to Jack Buck and Mike Shannon do the Cardinals. But in addition to that, Bob Hardy in the morning was like the Walter Cronkite of St. Louis. And Jack Carney at 9 o'clock in the morning until noon was a radio genius. He understood the theater of the mind that radio was at its best and how to make use of that. And he created a whole world around his program that people tapped into. People would say, you know, generally people arrive at work maybe at 9 o'clock. That's when he would come on the air. They'd sit in the parking lot because he'd open his show with some kind of extended anecdote or joke. And then they wouldn't walk into the office till like 9:08 or 9:10 or something until he'd finished. And late at night, Jim White was an institution. The whole thing was just at a very, very high level. And from my perspective, as a 22-year-old kid walking through the door, not only did I have reverence for it, not only was I in awe of it, but it made you get better in a hurry just to keep up.
Did it make you... did it take a while for you to be comfortable? You know, because that was a big job, you know, basically mm-hmm. coming out of college, you know, from Syracuse, yeah. and then you end up here, this station that was so revered. Did it take you a bit?
Oh, I was in awe of it, and I was reverent, not just respectful, reverent toward all the other broadcasters who were there, all of whom were obviously older than me and more accomplished than I was. Luckily for me, my little niche, the Spirits of St. Louis of the ABA, who lasted only 2 years, but those broadcasts, luckily for me, were pretty well received right off the bat. And then Jack Carney took a liking to me and put me on his show and kind of introduced me to a lot of people who otherwise wouldn't have been listening to the basketball game. So things fell in place pretty quickly. I had a few bumps in the road due to my immaturity and youth, but by and large, it felt pretty comfortable. Quicker than you might have guessed.
Bob, is it that your first national basketball game or your first national game that you called was rather last minute, that CBS National needed someone and they called KMOX who suggested you? Do I have that story right?
It was a couple years after I got to KMOX, 1976. I don't know how deep into this story you want to go, but the young Al Michaels was actually at CBS briefly and signed a contract to go to ABC, where he became one of the greatest sports broadcasters of all time. And this happened only days before the start of the 1976 NFL season. And to the point, the larger point we're making here, what a glorious roster of sports broadcasters KMOX had, the CBS network would use Jack Buck on weekends on games. They used Dan Kelly to call hockey games. And so... someone at CBS called Bob Hyland, legendary boss at KMOX and said, look, we're desperate. We got 3 or 4 days and we don't have anybody to do the 49ers at the Packers. And Mr. Hyland said, I've got a kid here, because Jack Buck already had an assignment and so did Dan Kelly. And Bob Starr had to do the football Cardinals on the radio. So he says, I've got a kid here. He's 24 years old. He looks younger than that, but we think he's pretty good. And they said, send him to us in New York. And so I flew to New York that day. They looked me over, and they signed me to a one-game contract for $500. And the only football game I'd ever called in my life was half a game on the radio on the campus station at Syracuse a few years earlier. And Jack Buck and Jay Randolph, a wonderful guy who also was part of KMOX and then went on to a long career at NBC TV, they showed me how to make a spotting board and gave me a few pointers. And I flew to Green Bay, and I did the game. And I don't know how, but CBS kind of liked me, and they kept bringing me back for regional games, which led eventually, I guess, to NBC noticing me, which is where I spent most of my career.
It's interesting how that does happen, where sometimes you're just available. You always think of these grand stories where you go through the mud and you have to do all of this, but sometimes you're just in the right spot and you're available, and it's amazing how that happens.
Let me give you another example of that, which I haven't thought of in years. David Letterman was just starting his run in late night at NBC. So it's March or April of 1982. He's just started. He's been on the air following Johnny Carson for like a month. And, you know, David was famous for these wacky bits that he did. And one idea that he had was elevator races. They would take people out of the audience, two people who didn't look athletic at all, and they would hand them mock Olympic torches and have them run down the hallway, get on the elevator, go down to the lobby, go around the block, come back to 30 Rock, get back on the elevator, get up to the studio on the sixth floor, and whoever emerged first would win the elevator race. So they needed someone to call the elevator race. And they call down to the sports office. And they want Marv Albert. They want Don Crickey. Letterman had no idea who I was, but I was sitting there, and Marv was in Cleveland doing a Knicks game, and I don't know where Don Crickey was, and so they say, send him up. It's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and they're going to tape like at 5. Send him up. But I was actually a fan of Letterman's, and I kind of knew what he wanted. He wanted this mock serious thing, like I was looking over the 18th green at the Masters or something. And so I went down the lobby, and I did this thing, framing this, and the elevator races were very successful, and Letterman loved it. But to show you just how unfamiliar with me he was, he introduced me as Bob Costa. But I got laughs, and he brought me back up to sit on the set with him for like the last 30 seconds before he said goodbye. And then after that, they started bringing me back for lots of stuff. So, you know, sometimes to your point, I just happened to be there.
That's incredible.
Well, you happened to be there, and
you got to be good at it, too.
You got to understand the assignment, and you did. That's incredible. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, you know, if you're around as long as I've been, stuff happens. You know, if you don't have, now that was early on, but if you don't have a few stories, really, you got to have a few stories, right?
Stuff happens.
Hey, Bob, anything cool ever happened to you? Not that I can think of.
That's the Bob Costas biography. Autobiography. Stuff happens.
Stuff does happen.
Yeah.
What is can you think of your favorite thing that you've ever done in broadcasting?
It's almost impossible to say. I've had a varied career, and some of it has been play-by-play, and some of it's been hosting, and some of it's been essays and interviews and that sort of thing. I think of Mickey Mantle when he came out of the Betty Ford Clinic. And I guess because I'd followed his career and we were acquainted with each other, I had a sense of how he needed to be made comfortable in that circumstance. It was an interesting line to walk because there was a journalistic aspect to it. This was on an NBC news magazine when they actually were news magazines, except for 60 Minutes. Every news magazine now is just a crime story. But then they were actual news magazines. So there was a newsworthy aspect to it, but there was also a sensitive human aspect to it. And the response to that was very gratifying. It wasn't so much the broadcasting part of it, but the human part of it that was important to me. Again, you've been around as long as I have. You just find yourself in the right place at the right time very often. Michael Jordan's last shot for the Bulls in 1998, heroic shot against Utah. You know, he took over the last 2 minutes of the game, as Michael was wont to do, and the last shot turned a one-point deficit into a one-point win and won the championship and clinched the second three-peat, the sixth title that the Bulls won in the Jordan era. And because it was such a classic moment, you know, someone like Joe Buck will tell you this. Joe's a great announcer, but you have to have great moments to be remembered. So Joe is there when David Fries hits the triple that ties the game, last ditch thing, when it looked like the Cardinals would lose Game 6 of the World Series, and with it, the series itself. And then Fries hits the game-winning homer in the 11th, and Joe says what only Joe had the right to say. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm.
Because his dad had said that very thing 20 years earlier, also in a Game 6, in the 1991 World Series, when Kirby Puckett hit the homer to win that game for the Twins. So, you know, to your earlier point, if you are in the right place at the right time, you hope you don't mess it up. But you have to be lucky enough to have those assignments. And, you know, Joe has been, and I have been.
And you have to deliver. And you have done that time after time, as Joe has as well. Bob Costas, we appreciate you being with us today on what is it's been a fun day for us. And even though FM doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That's
right.
It's awesome to have you on.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Amy. I can't tell you what a thrill it is for me to be heard over the FM airwaves.
We thought so. We knew it.
We love you, Bob. You're the best.
See ya.
Thank you, Bob.
Bob Costas,
oh,
with us on KMOX. I should let you know that if I don't think I've done it yet, have I? Yeah, we have a Gas House Gang show that starts at noon now.
And it's you.
It's me. Today it's Tom Ackerman and me. Tom will be with me Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday talking sports. And then Bernie's going to be part of it. Klabes is going to be part of it. We'll have a bunch of people talking Cardinals baseball and sports every day from 12 until 1. The Gas House Gang. And you can still catch it on YouTube. You know, it's been streaming on YouTube. We'll still be there, but we are going to be on the air every day starting at noon right here on 104.1 FM KMOX. Hey, don't forget, opening day is Thursday, and we still have tables available if you want to purchase 2, 4, 5, 6, 8 tables for that many. I don't know what's left.
Eight
but
tables, that seems like a lot.
Well, 8 people at a table?
Oh, I thought you said 8 tables.
No.
What, I thought you were listing the number of tables to buy.
Dude, no, you could buy a table for 2 or for 4. Yeah, bring everybody you've ever met. Kegs and Eggs is at 11 o'clock, but that is almost gone. The first pitch breakfast, though, you could purchase tables for. KMOX.com/events. It's 20% off right now. KMOX is the promo code. So if you type in the little promo code when you're purchasing, you'll get 20% off. You get the food included, bottomless mimosas and Bloody Marys and Budweiser and a commemorative mug and a pair of tickets for the game on Saturday, too. So
that's a deal.
I love that.
A deal and a steal.
So KMOX.com/events. To buy your first pitch breakfast tickets. And that's with, you're going to get stories from Vince Coleman of the 1985 National League Championship.
Stories that
team.
Won't be on the broadcast because Kegs and Eggs, we always broadcast that. And Chris Ranji and I will be there. But the first pitch breakfast will not be on air.
And as we are now on 104.1 FM, KMOX has moved over as of early this morning. Some changes in the lineup. And people have asked about Hancock and Kelly, if we are still doing Fridays with them. Yes, they are going to be on at 8:30. That is at least as of now. I guess that could change. But at 8:30, they'll be broadcasting just like they always have been. 8:30 until 9. And then from 9 o'clock until 10 o'clock, the entire hour, we have Hancock and Kelly with us on Fridays. So John and Michael are going nowhere. They are still right here on KMOX. And a lot of people have asked about them.
Yeah. Oh, because it's our favorite part of the week.
I mean,
it's our favorite part.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
it's so great.
Yeah.
They're so much fun.
Also, we love to hear from you. You can text us at 314-436-7900. We'd love for you to tell us how great we sound.
Oh, yeah.
How awesome we are.
Send us a voice message on the Odyssey app. You're listening on 104.1 FM now?
Because you'll be on FM. If we play your voice message,
that's right,
you'll be on FM, which will be great.
Good morning, Chris and Amy. Yes, I am listening to 104.1 FM. Very nice. Have a good day.
That's Tim.
That's awesome, Tim.
Is Tim on a, was he on a stair climber? What was he doing?
It sounds a little bit like a boat, maybe. Like, you know how when the boat's in the dock and it clicks? Because all the stuff's like hitting stuff. Like
and
when
he,
you're at
he
the Lake of the Ozarks and the boats are clicking.
He was inside the wheelhouse.
Is that what that's called?
It's called a wheelhouse.
Well,
that's why they say, did you know this?
I don't think the boats that I've been on have a wheelhouse. A pontoon boat doesn't have a wheelhouse.
Okay. Well, like a ship with a, you know, the wheel, right? That is called the wheelhouse.
So when people
say that's in my wheelhouse, that means your area of expertise because that's where the captain sits.
Oh, I didn't know the wheelhouse.
What do you think of that?
Well, I think that's a great explanation, Richie Rich over there.
You were welcome.
On ships? I was on a pontoon boat.
When we come back, we're going to get into a little news stuff. We haven't done any yet today. It's been a lighthearted day, a fun day for us, but it'll continue to be fun. It's not going to get... It's not suddenly going to be awful. We're going to talk to a political commentator, author of the daily newsletter, So What? You've seen him on CNN and Washington Post, all kinds of places. Chris Saliza with us next. 104.1 FM, KMOX. It is Amy Markscores and Chris Ranji, and we go to the guest line this morning. I keep wanting to say this afternoon. We're on until 12 now. The show goes from 9 until noon, and we visit with political commentator. He is the author of the daily newsletter, So What?, which you should be signed up for it now. And also an independent news creator on Substack. You can see him on YouTube as well. Chris Saliza, who is with us every Monday now on KMOX. How's it going, Chris?
It's good, although I'm now thinking that I want walk-up music, you know, like a baseball player. You know, like maybe like Final Countdown by Europe.
Is that what you want?
And then it's like, da-da-da-da, and then I come on. And you might be a little bit of a letdown, but I still think that would be good.
Chris, whatever you want, we'll do it for you.
Your favorite band?
That's in my rider, you know, my agreement with this. Yeah, it's that and only orange-colored peanut M&Ms.
Yes, all right. Well, whatever you want, we'll have it done. So what song?
Yeah, we got.
Yeah, so all right, you know what?
Countdown by Europe.
I'll tell you what. Give us just a second here.
Yeah,
we're
going
to start over.
1 second.
Okay, good. Yes.
We go to the guest line today. We talk to political commentator and the author of the daily newsletter, So What? Chris Saliza is with us on KMOX. Good morning, Chris.
What's up, KMOX?
See?
that sounds
bad.
Better.
Yeah.
That's got a lot of energy to it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, I think it's like I always wanted to be growing up. I always wanted to be a professional wrestler. And this is like my chance to kind of like, you know, it's like my ring entrance music.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well,
that was terrific. That made my day.
It's not unusual for professional wrestlers to get involved in politics and vice versa. So
it's actually a really good lens by which to understand the Trump presidency, to be totally honest. But yes.
Yeah. So,
speaking of that,
anything going on or
what is to be honest, because it is somewhat chaotic, what is top of mind for you today?
Yeah, so I would say two things. One, both Donald Trump related. I think the first is, you know, we are getting this showdown that we expected, but this is kind of the tip of the spear of the showdown between the judicial branch and the executive branch. So for people who have not been following this story, a number of people who the Trump administration has said were members of a Venezuelan gang were deported out of the country. They're currently in El Salvador, deported out of the country, no trial, no due process, nothing like that, under a 1798 act that allows a president to do that if we are at war. Donald Trump has said we're at war with undocumented immigration, and he has done that. This was appealed. It has gone through the judge essentially tried to stop those flights, to turn those flights around. It did not happen. And so we are in the midst of that fight. And I do think that is a critical fight going forward because we've seen the legislative branch largely capitulate to Donald Trump. And the judicial branch, obviously there are three branches, three co-equal branches of government. That's, I think, where the fight's going to be. Trump's lawyers have appealed this judge's ruling to an appeals court, which is above him. And that hearing is set for later today. How that turns out, I think, will be sort of a telling first indicator of where that executive versus judicial branch face-off is going. So that's one. The other is the ongoing conversation around tariffs. We're a week away from reciprocal tariffs, according to Donald Trump. Any country that has a tariff on us, we will place a tariff on them. What does that look like? Tariffs are not particularly popular. Donald Trump's polling numbers are down. The stock market is down. He does not like that. At the same time, he believes in tariffs. So this is a rubber meets road moment. So those are the two things that I'm sort of starting my week with.
I know this might be speculative, the question I'm asking you, but you say Donald Trump believes in tariffs. We also know he doesn't like it when the stock market doesn't look great. Is this him not understanding how tariffs work exactly? Is this him saying, well, I've already committed to this, so I've got to go full ramming speed ahead? Because it does seem like the two aspects of Trump, the business side and the tariff side, can't be reconciled.
Yeah, it is. It's an immovable force and unstoppable object, or immovable object and unstoppable force, whatever that phrase is. That's what it is. This is a guy, look, I always say this about Donald Trump, you can like him or you hate him. The truth is, he has not been someone who has a hard line set of beliefs from which he will never vary, right? I mean, he's been all over the place on lots of things, including his party. I mean, he was a Democrat and independent, now he's a Republican. But one through line that he's been consistent on since he was a business guy is he thinks tariffs work. Now, he's not an economist, and most economists believe they do not. They believe they lead to trade wars and that nobody really wins in a trade war. I don't know when it's kind of like a game of chicken. You know, it's like he's pressing down on the accelerator on tariffs, insisting that we're going to have more. The stock market's reacting poorly. His numbers on do people have confidence with him handling the economy are going badly. And he just keeps pressing down the gas. I don't know when and if he lets up, because you're exactly right, Amy. One of the key things to understand about Donald Trump is he does stuff that he thinks is going to make him popular. Now, that's not different from most politicians, but this is a thing that is making him less popular. There's no question about that. But it is also something that he believes in. When does belief and sort of political pragmatism, what those things are colliding, who wins in that? And I don't know the answer to that. I think next week will be a really good indicator. He has said these reciprocal tariffs will go into place April 2nd. Does he do that? Does he blink? Does he, you know, or does he go full speed ahead? You know, I think that will be at least an early indicator of which side of his personality is winning.
You know, you were talking about the court cases earlier, and that federal judges have ruled against the president on a number of issues, and some of them have been DOGE cuts and rescinding some of those. And now the Trump administration wants the Supreme Court to weigh in and potentially reverse decisions after all these probationary federal employees have lost their jobs. And again, he wants SCOTUS to take a look at it. What do you assume will end up happening here as it goes to it? What is a pretty conservative Supreme Court, though they haven't always ruled in his favor lately?
Yep. I mean, look, all of these things, including, I think, this deportation fight, as well as the DOGE cuts, to your point, they're all going to wind up in front of the Supreme Court. Now, whether the Supreme Court decides to take them up, what they rule, I don't know that, but I think they are all going to wind up in front of the Supreme Court. And one of the reasons I think this deportation thing case is telling is that Trump has done his usual thing, which he always does on Truth Social. You know, he said that the judge is a far left activist, that he should be impeached. And that led to John Roberts, who is effectively the head of the judiciary, right, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, to say, look, we can't talk about impeaching judges just because they give a ruling we don't agree with. Like, that down that road lies danger. He's right. But I think it was also meant as sort of a brushback pitch to Trump to say, don't just assume we're rubber stamping whatever you do. I mean, I do think that you're exactly right, Chris. The Supreme Court clearly has a conservative bent to it. It's 6-3 in terms of Republicans. Republican presidents have appointed 6. Democratic presidents have appointed 3. But I do think both Roberts and Amy Coney Barrett have shown both appointed by Republicans, have shown a willingness to not just go along with anything that Trump wants. And that's going to be the sort of, if you're looking for a like 50,000 foot storyline of this presidency, that's going to be it. How does the Supreme Court, which is going to get, at the end of the day, going to be the decider on a lot of these things, how do they decide? And then, as importantly, does Donald Trump and his administration comply, or do they openly ignore the ruling? And then we're headed. Then I actually think, I know there's been a lot of talk about constitutional crises. I don't think we're there yet. But if we have a president of the United States directly ignoring a Supreme Court decision that he doesn't agree with, then we have to start having that conversation.
Chris, as I mentioned, there's just kind of a lot going on, a lot to keep up with, but a story that, or an issue that really hit me this weekend, I was just upset by, is partly due to the DOGE cuts. And allegedly, the funding for a U.S.-based program that tracks the thousands of Ukrainian children who were abducted and taken to Russia to Russify these kids, tell them mm-hmm. that Ukraine's not a real country, tell them that their parents are traitors, and trying to make them part of Russia, which is a war crime, by the way, abducting mass numbers of children and abducting them and bringing them to a country and brainwashing them is a war crime. But we were tracking that. And allegedly that program, the funding has been ended for that program. And not only that, a lot of lawmakers are worried that the database was permanently deleted. 15 lawmakers, Republican and Democrat, sent a letter to Secretary of State Marco Rubio about this concern. Do we know anything about whether or not that information really was deleted? Do we know where this program stands?
No, we don't. And I think you're exactly right to highlight it. Look, this is what happens when you take a meat cleaver to the federal government. Like, I know people think, and the three of us have talked about this before, but I'm going to keep talking about it. I know people think that there is at least a perception that many people who work for the federal government are useless and lazy and they don't really do anything. The problem when you just start cleaving off large chunks of these departments and the workers who staff those things, there's real world consequences to those things, including outside of Washington. I mean, I always cite this map that the Wall Street Journal published about a month ago now, where it showed where USAID, Agency for International Development, jobs are. And yes, there are plenty in Washington. You know where else they are? In a lot of red states and red congressional districts. Like, the idea that this is just a bunch of, like, liberal Democrats drain the swamp. When you do not take what I would call measured approach to cutting the government jobs. And I think that's fine if you want to do some of that. I'm not going to argue that there isn't bloat in the federal government. There clearly is. But when you take an approach that is scattershot, that seems rushed, Elon Musk and Doge have had to go back on a number of things where it's like, oh, we fired these people who actually are the only people who know how to do this one thing. We have to rehire them. When you do that, real people are affected. This is not just numbers in a spreadsheet. And I don't know whether that will get through to people or whether they've just sort of decided like federal government equals bad. But I think stories like this highlight the fact that you cannot just say everything the federal government does is good, and neither can you say everything the federal government does is bad and needs to be gotten rid of. You know, that's just I understand people want a world of black and white solutions, but the truth is there's a lot of gray in there, and there are real lives being affected by these decisions. And I think that we have to do a good job of shining a light on that. Maybe people are okay with that, but I think they need to know that those things are actual impacts.
Mm.
Chris, is there anything from the newsletter you would like to tell us about?
Well, I always like to promote on every Monday, Chuck Todd, a former NBC Meet the Press host, and I, we've known each other forever. We talk politics, and we talked about something that I think is pretty provocative, not purposely provocative, but is a question that I think people should ask. Chuck asked me today, you know, is America America anymore? Which is like, is what we always thought of America, does that still hold? Is that a majority opinion? Do we want this shining city on a hill? Because that's not what we have right now. We have a sort of might makes right, we're going to take what we can take, everybody out for themselves view. And I think, honestly, that may well be the majority view in the country now. And I think it probably should occasion a conversation about who are we and who do we want to be. And that's obviously a big philosophical question. We didn't tackle all the ramifications of that, but I think it's a conversation that's worth having and worth checking out. So that's the thing that's on the site right now.
Awesome. Chris, we will do it again on Monday.
That's
all for you.
Much.
Yeah. In fact,
always a pleasure.
We had a texter who said now it's officially called the final letdown. There you go.
That seems about right.
What? That's what, what? You said. Chris said it was going to be a letdown when he got to him. So it's the final letdown.
I mean, when I come in on that kind of high, I feel like there's only one way to go.
Yeah.
It can only go up from here. Thank
That's
you,
right.
Chris.
Thank
All
you.
Right, y'all. Thank you. Good to talk to you.
That's Chris Saliza with us here on 104.1 FM KMOX. A text message to 314-436-7900. Rob, originally from St. Louis, he says, now in Oklahoma City,
Oklahoma
is catching up to the change to FM. We are on 104.1 FM now, and wants to know if Cardinals games will be broadcast on the Odyssey app. Well, here's the deal. Yes, but only if you're in the area. That's Major League Baseball rules. So you can listen to Cardinals baseball on the Odyssey app. If you're local, obviously you'll pick up 104.1 FM, and it's going to sound great on FM. But if you are trying to listen to Cards baseball in Oklahoma, you'll have to try 1120.
The only thing would be, and I know this because I guess is it where your phone is registered? Because I could listen to Cardinals baseball.
Your phone, it shouldn't work.
State.
Yeah, I mean, you could try it. It should not work. Your phone is geolocated, and if the app is doing its job, it will block you out of it.
So it's not like the service. It's not where your phone is based.
Right. You should not be able to pick it up if you're in Oklahoma.
But do they let you listen to preseason games?
Yeah, that's not different. It's
different.
No.
Preseason.
No, preseason is also whatever the MLB rule is.
I listened to Cardinals baseball in Colorado.
So you could try it. You shouldn't
but
be able
make
to,
no
though.
Promises. And maybe they weren't ready. Maybe it caught them off guard.
It's possible. Sometimes for whatever reason, it will work, I guess. But
Here's
then eventually they'll figure it out and then you'll be blocked out. But
I'm going to leave the country and see if I'm going to go somewhere and see if
that's
I
a good
can
idea.
Hear it. Yeah.
But yeah, so you can listen on 1120 still if you're a few states away, and that signal is pretty good depending on where you are. So we're there, but we want you to locally listen to 104.1 FM. It sounds good.
It's delightful.
FM
I did that.
Great.
I had my coffee. Drove to work, was listening to KMOX on the FM. Hot dog. And you know who's most excited about it is Bob Costas.
Yeah. He really seemed very, very, very excited. Also, 102.5 HD2, that's no longer. Yeah. No longer KMOX. It's hip hop now. So you have to just go to 104.1.
Well, have fun. I'm going to listen to you on the Gas House Gang, Ronch.
Yep. Every Monday through Friday from 12 until 1, we'll talk Cardinals, we'll talk sports with you. Coming up next, Tom Ackerman and me, Chris Ronji. The Gas House Gang is next on KMOX. Chris and Amy back tomorrow at 9.
Well, it's time for the sausage.